This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
How you doing? This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff, once again, coming at you from the FedEx Studios here on Long Island. Steve and Danny, once again, not here due to whatever prior commitments they've got going on.
Very busy prior commitments.
I know, right? It's been, what, almost 2 months now since we've actually had them here in studio with us?
Have they been here for the entire season at all?
Yeah, they have. I think they stopped right after the Thanksgiving games. I think that's the last time they were here for the show.
Boy,
I know, but it's been so long. I've lost track at this point.
Yeah, I know, right?
We do have Steve's thoughts on the sports world because we're gonna get into. If we have time, we'll get into the NBA and the NHL. We've got big news coming from Major League Baseball as it pertains to the rest of the league and the New York metro area. We'll get into that later on. The big news, though, obviously, is the NFL playoffs. We are set for championship weekend.
Four teams left
standing. It's going to be Minnesota and Philadelphia.
It should have been New Orleans, but we know what happened there.
We'll get into that in a little bit. It's New Orleans. It's Philly and Minnesota in the later game. Early game is, I can't believe I'm saying this, New England and Jacksonville.
I love the Bortles facts.
I know.
I was going to say Bortles mania, but I think that's just us.
No, well, it is Bortles mania. It's Bortles mania.
I think Bortles mania is just known in this Solly and Steve circle.
Yeah. Well, now it's known to a wider audience because we're revealing it on the air, but the Bortles facts on Twitter is fantastic to look at. If you haven't seen it already, I'm encouraging you to go check it out. It is totally worth looking at.
It's like Tom Brady's losses in the playoffs, Blake Bortles' losses in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, you do those comparisons and stuff like that. It's like basically all comparisons to Brady.
Yeah.
And how Bortles is better than Brady, even though Bortles has one year in the playoffs.
I know. It's fantastic, though. It really is.
It's like, yeah, you're hiding these facts, but that's why it's so awesome.
Yeah, we'll get to that breakdown later on because let's face facts, the Sunday games in the divisional round were way more entertaining than the Saturday games.
Oh, my God, yes.
The first game, part of me was pulling for for Atlanta for two reasons. One, I didn't think Philly was going to be able to get it done with Nick Foles at quarterback, not with the way he played the last couple of games after taking over for the injured Carson Wentz. And part of me wanted Atlanta to, honestly, I wanted it to be Atlanta and Minnesota in the NFC Championship game. And I wanted Atlanta, a small part of me wanted Atlanta to get back to the Super Bowl because I wanted the rematch from last year. And I wanted Atlanta to atone for their sins of letting New England back in that football game last year. But not going to happen because Philly walked away with a 15-10 win. Despite the best efforts of Matt Ryan, who did throw for the game's only touchdown. Went 22 of 36 for 210 and a touchdown. The only one to have a receiving touchdown was Devontae Freeman. Julio Jones had 9 catches for 101 yards, but the one play that I think is going to stick out for Atlanta fans is the fact that Philly's defense stepped up right at the end of the game on the fourth down from the 2-yard line. Ryan had Julio Jones, but it sailed over his head and it allowed Philly to walk away with a 15-10 victory thanks to the efforts also of Jake Elliott, who hit 3 field goals. So if you're Philly, I'll give the Eagles all the credit in the world. It's an impressive win for a team that wasn't expected to do much. And despite the fact that they were the higher seed, we talked about this last week, they were the underdogs in this football game. So, go figure. Philly's the underdog. They pull up the win in what is... I know it's technically not an upset, but it's considered by a lot of people an upset because of the way things were looking going into the football game. But, hey, give credit where it's due. Philly was the better team on Saturday. Same thing, too, can be said for the New England game. I'm sorry, but that was really a no contest.
No.
Between New England and Tennessee.
No.
Yeah, Tennessee scored great, but you're going up against Tom Brady in the playoffs. That man rarely loses, especially when the game's on the line. So go figure with that. Trying to get my train of thought.
Yeah,
there we go.
It's like you see the game, you watch for basically the first half, and then you turn it off and you say, well, I know this game's over, and you later in the night check the score to see if you're right, and of course you're right, because it was New England against Tennessee, which apparently cost the head coach of Tennessee his job.
It did. But
even though he got a vote of confidence before saying that he was going to stay.
Which I think is completely ass backwards.
So another reason why you never believe in vote of confidences by the owners.
I mean, yeah, Mariota threw for 2 touchdowns. That's great. And Eric Decker had a decent day. I mean, both touchdowns went to Davis, but Decker had himself a nice day with 85 receiving yards. Didn't matter. Especially when you're down 21-7 going into the half. Brady threw for 3 touchdowns.
I mean, you're down by 2 scores at a time, and you still have a break. You still have a chance to break through. But, I mean, when it just didn't feel like it.
No,
and
I mean, come on. You'd have to know going into that game that
going into Sunday's game when it was 28-14 when Jacksonville was leading at the half. I mean, you felt that Pittsburgh still had a chance.
Yeah, because Pittsburgh.
But yeah, but this game though, it's like amazing how they both those games had a point differential of 14, and you had two completely different feelings.
I know, and. Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but when you're down 21-7 in New England, that's pretty much a death sentence, especially come playoff time. James White scored twice. New England just knows how to get it done. But now I'm curious to see, though, and I know I'm getting sidetracked a little bit, but we'll get back to playoff talk in a second. Turns out a couple of Belichick's assistants are now gone for head coaching jobs. Matt Patricia is going to be the head coach in Detroit.
Which is a completely different report that we had going into the last week when all signs felt like Patricia was going to the Giants.
Yeah, but nah, Matt Patricia's going to Detroit. Of course, they can't officially sign anything until New England season's over, which is probably...
I mean, again, it's all reports and stuff like that as well.
No, I think that's definite.
That's what I'm saying. It's still reports.
Yeah, and I also think it's
until
definite.
The ink dries on the contract, nothing is official.
Same thing, too, with
if
the
you
Giants
want to keep
coach.
On stepping over me...
Sorry. But it's the same thing, too, with the Giants head coach. They got a new one as well, Pat Shermer, the soon-to-be former offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings.
Again, that's not official yet.
I know. It's reports. Can't be official until the Vikings season ends, which I hope isn't until after the Super Bowl. I'm honestly I'll straight up say, we'll get into the game of the weekend first.
Let's start with those games, the Sunday games.
Yeah, which one do you want to start with?
Let's go in chronological order.
All right. Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. How Mike Tomlin hasn't been chastised in Pittsburgh yet, I don't know.
What do you mean he hasn't been chastised in Pittsburgh?
Worse than he already has been.
Some of them want him fired. What do you mean?
That I hadn't heard. I hadn't heard the firing reports yet. That's why...
Not reports, but it's by fans and stuff like that.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I bet the media was harsh on him and stuff like that, but my God... But also, if you fire him, who is your next replacement? He has a great track record as a coach. Give me like 5 head coaches right now who are better than Mike Tomlin, with the track record of him as well.
Are you including Bill Belichick?
That's one.
Yeah, all right, Bill Belichick, Ron Rivera, John Fox,
and
the only other fourth one I could think of is the recently returned John Gruden out in Oakland. It's the only other ones I can think of. Oh, yeah. The Walrus. Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, no.
How can you not say Andy Reid's not had a better track record?
Has Andy Reid won Super Bowls yet?
No.
Thank you.
He's gotten the one, and he ran into the New England Patriots, who were a buzzsaw at that time.
And also, does Pittsburgh even let go of head coaches due to crazy fan anger?
No.
I mean, was it like 3 head coaches in 40 years? Honestly, guys,
that's what I'm checking out. But
the only problem was that Pittsburgh was so egotistical that they always played down to their competition. Because why bother to try and kick everyone's ass? Because we're just too good. We just want to kick ass and overlook all of our opponents. And oh boy, we're down. We better just kick it. We better win in the fourth quarter. Because my God, and. Because they got so blown out in the first half by Jacksonville, they, again, took them not seriously at all, even though Jacksonville beat them in the regular season in their one game early in the season.
Week 5, and it was 5 picks from Big Ben.
Good for them.
And for the record, I'm sorry to cut you off, but 3 head coaches since 1969.
See?
Three head coaches in Pittsburgh since 69. Chuck Knoll from 69 to 91, won 193 games. Bill Cowher, 92 to 2006, 149 and 90. And now, Mike Tomlin, 2007 to present, 103 and 57.
So it's, you know, you just got to stay the course. But again, they were really egotistical and talked a lot of smack and only looked at going, finally being the Patriots, which, I mean, it just doesn't seem like that really happens at all.
Yeah.
Since New England always finds a way to kick Pittsburgh's ass.
Hey, they did it last year, too.
Exactly. So they just really overlooked everyone and finally came across a team that was so young, so talented, so hungry that they finally gave Pittsburgh their own medicine.
Yes, they
did. In terms of just in your face and we're not letting up. We're going to keep on destroying you with our running game and let Blake Bortles throw great timely throws that were necessary to win.
Hey, Leonard Fournette scored twice, one of which was off a Big Ben interception early in the football game, which I think kind of turned the tide.
He had three touchdowns. He ran in for three.
I'm finishing checking the stat line for now. Yeah, Leonard Fournette, yeah, his second one came off the Big Ben
pick.
Yeah,
you said two.
Yeah, you know, his second of three came off the Big Ben pick.
Okay, good. You correct yourself. 25, safe baseman, okay.
Yep, 25 carries for 109 yards, three touchdowns. Blake Bortles, 14 of 26, 214 and a touch. Big Ben, worth noting, 37 of 58, 469 yards, five touchdowns, and the one interception.
Yeah, I mean, the second half was crazy, though.
Oh, but, yeah.
But still, not good enough.
Yeah. Right. When you, especially if you're down like 28-14 going into halftime, that ain't good. Yeah, I know you put up 21 points, including scoring with a second left. But let's see. The fact that you decided to throw the ball on fourth and one instead of just handing the ball off to Le'Veon Bell might have been a bad decision on the offensive coordinator's part. I don't know.
I feel like that offensive coordinator's part was trying to be too finesse for himself, for his own good, for his own reasons whatsoever.
He was. Just throw the ball. I mean,
I'm surprised, though, Tomlin didn't disagree with him and just say, no, we're running the ball. We're not doing this risky thing. Or maybe, I don't know why he didn't like overrule him as head coach.
You know, Todd Haley's definitely got some questions to answer in Pittsburgh. And it should have been, Tomlin should have said, look, it's fourth and one, let's just run the football. But then again, and Steve made this argument earlier in the week, and we'll hear his thoughts in a few minutes. But
if he has his thoughts on this game, why don't we hear it now?
Well, it's basically his thoughts are of the entire NFL weekend.
Okay, so.
So that's why I said we'll save it.
Fine.
But he made the comment earlier in the week that Mike Tomlin isn't exactly a good strategist as a head coach. And to a degree, he's right. Yes, he's won 103 regular season games as the Steelers head coach.
You got to have
years.
Some really good strategy, though, to win that many games.
Exactly.
But also, that's why you have your coordinators to help give you advice so you're not in over your head. But the offensive coordinator was in over his own head to go throw on fourth and one.
Yeah. And
you mean you can't use a quarterback sneak with Big Ben's big frame?
Apparently not. At least not in Todd Haley's mind.
It's like, here's what it is. Try to stop it. We're pretty sure you can't. So here you go.
I guess
they were thinking, oh, they know this is coming. Let's try to do something else. If you really think so, then just try to disguise it and not even like try to set up a package where it's like, oh, he's going to throw.
Yeah, well,
I don't
or,
know.
Or you,
just me.
No, smart concept would be, okay, they're expecting a run on fourth down, right? Play action and just have Ben roll out and go for the first down that way. But I know he's not Cam Newton, but still.
I think it's more like, if they actually did a quarterback sneak and said, this is our best option right now, or something like, give it your best because we know we've been successful with it.
Yeah.
Try and stop us, Jacksonville.
Jacksonville couldn't do it.
And if Jacksonville couldn't, you know, do that, or if the Jacksonville did do it, it's like, I think you would have more fans, you know, say, all right, well, they did that. That was our best offer because you run the ball in fourth and one and they stopped it. Good for Jacksonville. Or maybe fans are just stupid. Like, why do they try to sneak play and then throw it? Because fans are just stupid and fanatical.
There's more to it than that, though. There was, failing to convert on a couple of fourth downs.
I was talking about that specific point, though, but go on.
Yeah, there's the turnovers early, and oh, yeah, why the hell would you go for an onside kick?
When you've been proven this season you're not good at onside kicks?
Exactly. Why would you try going for it?
I guess, desperate times, desperate measures.
I realize that, but I mean, is it me, or wouldn't you have enough faith in your defense? I know they're not Jacksonville's defense, which has been... I know that, yeah, granted, Jacksonville gave up 42 points, but
still. Wasn't an onside kick still too early?
Yeah, I thought there was too much time left, and if you boot it away, and the defense can make a stop and pin Jacksonville deep, you get the ball back with plenty of time on the clock and good field position.
Yeah, but again, if that was executed, people say, what a gutsy move, that was great. So, again, it's one of those lopsided things.
I know, there's that, and there was also other coaching decisions that were made on Sunday that leave you scratching your head, coming this time out of New Orleans and Minnesota, and the fact that Sean Payton stupidly decides to challenge not once but twice, burning two timeouts
yes.
early in the fourth quarter, which Ooh. Cost him the game.
I don't know if you can really say it cost him, but it definitely... Because, again, that Matt, that's all hindsight and whatnot. Because if we talk about that last play, like, if things happened, then, you know, New Orleans Saints would have won. So, you know.
I mean, but I would admit
but
it.
But, boy, what an ending that was.
Yes,
huh?
It was. Oh, I feel boy. So bad for Marcus Williams. I really do.
I mean, if you heard him from the press conference, it seems like, though, he has a good head on his shoulder, even though that play, boy.
Yeah.
That's going to live in infamy for sure.
Yes, it is. Marcus Williams with the whiff, and it made it even worse when you run into your own teammate and Ken Crawley was trying to make the tackle from the other side.
Yeah, bad mechanics right there. So, yeah, that and now Case Keenum and Diggs. Is it Jason Diggs?
Stephon Diggs.
I don't know why I thought Jason.
I don't know either.
I think the name Jason Diggs sounds better.
It does.
But Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs are now in Minnesota lore for that seventh heaven play.
Yeah, it's now officially been called the miracle in Minneapolis.
And in the huddle, if you heard one of the interviews with, I think it was the tight end of the Vikings.
Yeah.
Like he said, that play was called seventh heaven.
Hey, all right. If it works, why not? I like it. It's got a nice ring to it, though. I like it.
Yep.
Seventh heaven play, it worked. Diggs made the catch. Williams completely whiffed. And as Diggs was going up for the ball, I'm seeing Williams coming as I was watching
the
play.
Yeah, he was too early.
Yeah, not only did he jump too early, but I'm like, okay, one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to catch him, and Diggs is going to fall on the ball, come loose, and that's the game. Or he's going to drive him out of bounds. And Minnesota still has a shot at it.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting the complete whiff job. And as soon as he whiffed and Diggs landed, I'm like, oh, crap, hang on to that ball. He kept his feet and took off. I'm like, that's game.
I mean,
that's it.
Even if he landed on his knee, no one touched him, so he would have been fine anyway.
Exactly, because it was the closest guy to him was Colley, and he got knocked out by Williams.
And you look at the replay, and Marshall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did not even touch him on the way down.
Yeah.
So he was clear to go.
There was nobody within a mile of him.
He certainly went.
Yeah, and I got to admit, as the game wore on, I was pulling for New Orleans because I'm a fan of Drew Brees. He's probably one of my favorite quarterbacks in the NFL right now, and I wanted to see him get another shot at a title. But as the game wore on, Minnesota blew a lead in this game too. They had a 20-point lead, blew it.
I think it was 17 point.
Sorry, you're right. 17-point lead.
Yeah,
excuse me.
Yeah.
17-point lead, blew it. Had to come back again and ended up getting the win.
Yeah,
down a point.
Yeah, it was like. Three or four lead changes, but three lead changes
at least
with 3 minutes left.
Yep. And
I mean, you can't get any more excited than that. And Brees again showed why he's still an amazing quarterback.
Yes, he is.
Even though he had a poor first half, the whole team did, honestly. He really showed, I'm carrying this team and we're going to win. But unfortunately, the defense fell short for him.
And interesting stat, both quarterbacks had the exact same completion and attempt line. Both quarterbacks went 25 of 40 in this game.
Good for them.
Keenum went 25 of 40, 318, a touchdown and a pick. Brees, same completion and attempt percentage, but 294 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions. And the third one was the biggest one. Well, no, it almost turned out to be the biggest one of them all, but Case Keenum had the biggest one anybody had ever expected in Minnesota.
Yeah, especially out of Case Keenum.
Yep, and I wanted Minnesota to win because I want to see it happen. The Minnesota Vikings will play in the Super Bowl in their home stadium.
Yes.
And it's the first year in the
arena. We are one
game
away of possibly seeing that happen.
And they got to beat Philadelphia in Philly to get there. But I think the NFL is happy that Minnesota won, and they're even happier that they have to go to Philly.
I don't know, really.
Well, no. The only reason I even bring it up is because now it gives the NFL a proper amount of time to be able to get U.S. Bank Stadium ready for the Super Bowl. Because imagine if Atlanta had to go there this week.
So, those are the breaks. I mean, what do you want to say?
I know. I mean, it'd be cramming more time for the NFL to get
there. Okay, 2 weeks cramming time. I bet they had that stuff ready months ago. And they're ready to ship it up and just set it all up.
Well, now they got 3 weeks to do it instead of two. So it gives him even...
Okay, yeah, the hotels, the whole fan area, which is not even probably at the stadium at all, is probably at some convention center. Okay, Matt, sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure that takes, like, 3 weeks. No, conventions, all those types of things, those, you know, you could start that a week before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or even though it's a week, you know, you could start like the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. You know, you set up for Media Day, Radio Row at the hotels or convention center. That's easy stuff. That doesn't take three weeks.
That's it. It'll take 2 weeks, Matt. It'll take a week max, and then everybody's there on Radio Row the week leading into the week of the Super Bowl.
Matt, I work at conventions. I know you do. It wouldn't take... Even if there was a home game in Minnesota and Minnesota wins, and you know there's now only 2 weeks left, it doesn't take 2 weeks.
I know. But I read that through ESPN that the people at the NFL are happy that Minnesota's moving on and playing in Philly next week to give them more time to set up.
That's just a dumb BS fluff article for no reason at all. I know. For a writer to get a paycheck.
Yeah. All right. I got to admit, though, quote of the entire weekend has to go to Jalen Ramsey of the Jaguars. You know what he said after celebrating the Jags' win over Pittsburgh?
What'd he say?
He said, "We're going to beat the Pats next week, we're going to the Super Bowl, and we're going to win this bitch."
Well, good for them. Let them be hungry. Yeah. But also, I don't know if you can really say that the NFL is really surprised by it all.
I know.
Because going at the start of the season, if you told me that the four quarterbacks in the championship round would be Blake Bortles, Case Keenum, Foles, and Brady.
Yeah.
Would you really say that would be an appeasing championship game?
Just based purely on quarterbacks? Games?
Well, yeah, like those starting quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'd be intrigued by it. Because you have one guy you'd expect to be there in Brady, and the other three guys, it's... Who the hell are they, and how the hell did they end up here?
That's just you, but several others, and the way that the NFL ratings have been going down and all these injuries and all that stuff that made people tune away from the NFL, now you have three barely known names in the national spotlight.
On championship weekend.
On championship weekend. And imagine if it's Bortles and either Keenum or Foles in the Super Bowl.
Ah. Oh.
I know for you, just because you get other teams a chance and other quarterbacks a chance, it'll be great. But do you really think the NFL will get the best ratings whatsoever?
No.
If Brady is not in the Super Bowl?
Hell no.
So the NFL, even though they like to see all these new teams and all these new quarterbacks and all that stuff, they're probably like really nervous that Brady might be eliminated.
I know.
And we have to watch a Super Bowl featuring the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Minnesota Vikings, even though that's a good story in its own right because of Minnesota. And there's some good stories overall, but a Super Bowl that will have very little national appeal whatsoever unless you're a big football fan.
Yeah. I mean, when the playoffs started, the big appeal would have been one of two things. It would have been either Brady against the Vikings in Minnesota for the Super Bowl, because I think that's still a...
That's probably your best Super Bowl bet for
right now,
Yes.
But the other big one would have been, Atlanta's back in the playoffs, so is New England.
No.
Ta-da! Rematch.
Okay, but...
No, I'm saying that would have been the dominating headlines at the start of the playoffs. At least that's how I thought of it. I wanted to see Minnesota get in, but I wanted a rematch.
Okay, I think the one would have been, finally we get to see in the Super Bowl, Breeze and Brady.
Yeah, I would have wanted that too.
They would have loved to have that chance of going into these two games over the weekend.
Yep.
The NFL would have been great. We have a great opportunity, good chance. Let's just hope that happens, and we're going to have a great quarterback Super Bowl.
Yes.
And both teams are recognizable. We don't have to really sell for it because those two names sell for themselves, and there you go. But now you have a 25% chance of Brady making it to the Super Bowl in terms of if you just look at four teams and stuff.
I know.
I bet New England has a good chance of winning on that betting odds, but we'll go through that later, of course.
Before we get into Steve's thoughts on division around weekend, two interesting stats, and they both relate to Tom Brady and the Patriots. This was Brady's 10th playoff game of throwing at least three touchdown passes,
Woo!
Moving him past Joe Montana for the most in NFL history.
Woo!
And this is the 7th consecutive year that the Patriots are playing in the AFC Championship game. Woo! No other NFL team has 7 straight winning seasons. Ooh. Yeah, you ain't happy about it, I know, but that's still a jarring fact that the Pats have had.
I mean, it certainly is.
More AFC consecutive appearances in the AFC Championship game than teams have had winning seasons.
So, do you give credit more to New England or how crappy the AFC is?
It's 50-50.
Well, where do you lean the 51-49 to?
New England being that good.
Okay.
New England being that good. And the Patriots are good. I'm just waiting for the rest of the NFL to get up to that level. There's a couple of teams that have the potential to be there. Pittsburgh does. Off the top of my head, the Raiders might if they can stay healthy. The Raiders have that possibility. The Rams, same thing. Atlanta, Minnesota, New Orleans, and the NFC have the possibility to get up to that level of being as great as the Patriots are. I'm not saying they're going to have that longevity, but they have at least the potential to get up to that level. So with all that being said, Steve gave his thoughts on...
It's crazy. We have a generation of pure Patriot dominance.
I know. I think they've had only two seasons since the turn of the century where they haven't won the division, which is an incredible fact in and of itself. All right, so Steve's thoughts on divisional round weekend are as follows. As for the divisional playoffs, thank heavens for the Vikings-Saints game. Other than some series in Jaguars-Steelers, this year's NFL playoffs have been a complete bore fest.
Yeah, exactly.
The Vikings-Saints game, even without that miraculous finish, still would have been the best playoff game this season by far. It was really the only playoff game that was competitive. Although Jaguars-Steelers finished close, it was really the Jaguars getting way out in front early and then watching the Steelers play catch-up for the rest of the game. They may have even pulled it off if Mike Tomlin wasn't an overrated head coach. But as for this week, I expect at least one of the conference championship games to be competitive, and that's Eagles-Vikings. If that game is boring, it's either because of a blowout or because of it being low scoring, then we are doomed because Patriots-Jaguars has less than a 0% chance of it being competitive. I mean, if you honestly believe that Bill Belichick is going to lose to Blake Bortles, remember how good Mariota looked against the Chiefs? Well, the next week, the Patriots sacked him 7 or 8 times. Let's see. Expect the same thing. The closest this game will be is at the coin toss. The Patriots will take this game easy. As for the other game, I'm rooting for the Vikings because they would be the hardest competition for the Patriots with their defense, and they would be the first home team ever in the Super Bowl. But I just see the Eagles winning it because that would make the Patriots' lives easier.
You went over or at least Steve forgot to say the first team in Super Bowl history to host the Super Bowl and be in it at the same time.
Yep, that's what he was getting at.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with as good as Jacksonville's defense is, I could see...
They have a great front four.
Yes, they do. And we'll break this down a little bit further on the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com.
Something Tennessee didn't have, but...
Yeah, Tennessee didn't get enough pressure on Brady.
I mean, I feel like Jacksonville has a really good puncher's chance.
Yes, they do.
Because of their defense.
Yes, they do.
I mean, the way to beat Brady is to have a stellar front four, and you got the backfield that can cover opponents, their receivers and Gronk man-to-man. If you're not good and you have to rely on zone defense for your receivers and you can't put pressure on Brady, you're done for. And it seems like Jacksonville has that young talent, that hunger, to go at Brady and to stick on man-to-man in the backfield like glue to those receivers more than I would ever believe anyone else in the AFC.
Yeah, with the way Jalen Ramsey...
Even in Pittsburgh.
I know. With the way Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye played in that backfield, when you've got Paul Posluszny, who, yes, is a little bit older, but he still knows how to wreak havoc from the middle linebacker position. You got... Calais Campbell up front, him and Dante Fowler were near the top of the NFL in sacks this year. You've got enough talent on that Jacksonville defense that could make Brady's life interesting. But again, knowing how clutch Tom Brady comes up in the playoffs and knowing how well of a game planner Bill Belichick is, New England will still find a way.
Yes.
New England's still going to find a way to be able to pull that off. And yeah, as good as Philly looked last week against Atlanta, I know that's not saying a whole hell of a lot, but with the way Philly looked against Atlanta last week, it's a completely different animal going against Minnesota, and I could see it being Minnesota-New England in the Super Bowl. And it's going to be a compelling storyline, and I know ratings are down. According to one report I'd heard, the ratings have been down at least 10% from last year's games in every playoff game this year, with I think the exception, I haven't heard the division round numbers yet, but I know Wildcard Weekend was definitely down 10% from last year, at least. And I'd be willing to venture to guess that the numbers were down too, with the exception maybe of the Minnesota game. Minnesota-New Orleans. Other than that, I think everything went down this year.
That Minnesota game is really going to put more interest in the NFC title game.
Oh, yeah.
More so than Jacksonville's win over Pittsburgh to say, oh, we got a new contender, new team in general trying to take down Brady.
Yeah.
The storyline of Minnesota's is going to have more fan interest overall. Expect that game to be even bigger in terms of rating-wise, especially since the NFL thought the same thing and put it in prime time.
Yes, they did. And, hell, there's been other intriguing storylines that have gone on around, especially here in the New York area.
Like
one
what?
One of which pertains to baseball. And I know it's a little weird talking about baseball during a heated playoff.
Man, we always talk about baseball. We don't talk about the other sports.
I know. Well, okay, then how about this? Steve's got his thoughts on what the Mets have done, and so do I, quite honestly. Before we get into basketball and hockey, we'll get through this quickly. How about the fact that the Mets had a chance to pick up Andrew McCutchen before he was traded to the Giants, and all they had to do was throw in a package that involved Brandon Nimmo. Did they do it? No. Why? Because they're idiots. Mets management...
It's really hard to have an opinion when you're pretty smart right on with that, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, let's face facts. You're honestly going to try to convince me to buy tickets this year. I'm probably going to go to one game anyway. Just out of, like, habit.
For free.
I'll try.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, how can you honestly try to convince somebody like me to be able to buy tickets for the Mets this year when all you're giving me hope for is Jay Bruce, Yoenis Cespedes, and the pitching staff? I need more than that.
The pitching staff that's based on hope.
Yeah.
Hope that they don't get injured, which they will.
I mean, you're trying to tell me that you can't trade a fourth outfielder to the Pirates for a guy who can play second base and third base in Josh Harrison.
Well, obviously they see potential in Nimmo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the guy gets on base
so much potential that you want to trade it for NL MVP.
Well, I think part of the argument with that is because. Andrew McCutchen's only got 1 year left on his contract. He would have been a free agent next year anyway.
Maybe they felt that McCutchen wouldn't re-sign here.
Maybe.
And if they did, he would be asking too much for what the Mets want to pay for.
Well, not only that, but I'm also hearing reports now that Josh Harrison wants out of Pittsburgh anyway. Because Pittsburgh's traded... I wouldn't consider the Pirates to be a possible contending team, but they've traded away their best pitcher in Gerrit Cole. They've traded away Andrew McCutchen. Harrison wants out. And I'm hearing the Yankees are now putting in a phone call for it.
Because why not? Let's have the Yankees build more.
Yeah.
Right?
Memo to the Mets. Josh Harrison wants out. Send Pittsburgh Brandon Nimmo and get Josh Harrison here. I ranted about it a little bit on the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com, asking the question if Brandon Nimmo is really worth hanging on to and not trading. You can read that there. But Steve's got his thoughts on this whole Mets situation, and then we will jump to the other sports, I promise. But Steve's thoughts on the Mets. I gave the Mets a little credit last show with Bruce, but now that it's gone right out the window. We have now found out that the Mets passed on Andrew McCutchen and will probably lose out on Josh Harrison because the Mets don't want to give up on their fifth outfielder, Brandon Nimmo. No, that's not fake news. The Mets actually believe that they'd be getting ripped off in a trade with their fifth outfielder for a starting center fielder.
He's going to be playing right, though.
In all likelihood, yeah, or for a starting infielder. All right? The Mets continue to be baseball's punchline. Just imagine if the Yankees felt trading Castro for Stanton was too much. It's unbelievable. What do they possibly believe Brandon Nimmo is going to turn into? I've seen him play. He's a career backup pinch. He has career backup / pinch hitter written all over him. He doesn't do anything. Just lost my train of thought there.
There's a train of thought when you're reading something.
I know. He doesn't do anything particularly well. He's an okay hitter, an okay fielder, and has an okay arm. I'm not saying he's a major leaguer, but this is a player... Who's hit his ceiling at this point in his career is pretty much a backup. But guess what? The Mets drafted him in the first round and over the late, great Jose Fernandez. So once again, the Mets are letting this BS pride get in the way for making a smart baseball move. This team will just never get it, ever. And to a degree, he's got the argument.
Yeah. This is why I become very, even though I wear a Met hat and stuff.
Yes, you do.
I am very apathetic with this team.
And you've become more of a watered-down Mets fan than you had in years past.
Exactly. I don't really want to go to games. I don't feel like I will be entertained by paying their parking fees, by paying how much food costs there for a freaking hot dog.
Food is at least $20. Parking was, what, $15 when we went to the White Sox game something a couple like years that. Ago?
I am not going to invest money when I have other things that I want to invest to and hold on to because I need to make my own payments.
Yeah.
I don't want to use my leisure money on a team that just doesn't feel like management wants them to win or gives them the best opportunity to win.
Right.
For whatever reason their explanation is. It tells me that I don't want to see them. You have a pitching staff that's injured a lot, and you're basing that on hope. And if things crumble, then you're really in a hole, and you don't have a lot of good assets on you. You have some, but do you really expect going into spring training that I'm going to be excited as a Met fan that you got some few good hitters and, again, potential pitchers that haven't proven themselves besides Jake?
This would be a loud and resounding no.
If Syndergaard stays healthy, okay, maybe my interest will peak. I'll reevaluate myself as the season goes on.
What about the Dark Knight, if he returns to form?
We've seen that it hasn't happened.
Okay.
Has that trend really going to happen?
I doubt it.
So, no. And with Mats, has he proven himself to be a reliable pitcher? No.
Not from what I've seen, no.
So, am I excited? No. Do I want to buy tickets because of that? No. So why bother?
If you got tickets for free, would you go?
If everything was free.
So free tickets, free train, free food.
Or free parking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that.
And a coupon for merchandise.
All right. So it's the only way you even sniff.
Half off coupon for a jersey.
There you go. See, whatever happened to your jersey collection?
It's in my room somewhere. Or it's in one of these closets.
Yeah.
In the studio.
Yeah. Yes, there's a vast jersey collection in the studio.
It's not that vast anymore.
Not for baseball. For hockey it was.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I got to admit it, after what I've seen the last couple of games, I'm strongly considering Matt Barzal for Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he's been really good. A good pickup in the draft for the Islanders. Something that hasn't really happened in some time.
I know. And if memory serves me correctly, all that the Islanders had to give up for Matt Barzal was Griffin Reinhart.
Yes, to Edmonton, where Edmonton had the 16th overall pick, yep. I believe. But that was a pick from some other team, correct?
Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So yeah, and Griffin Reinhart
Pittsburgh
is
got
not
the 16th overall that traded to Edmonton?
Yeah.
How do they get the 16th
overall? That I don't remember. I gotta look now.
We don't need to look at the tree.
Yeah, no, I know. But long story short, Griffin Reinhart went to Edmonton for the 16th overall pick. Reinhart's no longer with the Oilers organization. He's now playing in the minors for the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Islanders managed to pull off getting Matt Barzal out of it.
See, Garth Snow can do a good trade.
He's got, I know. Knowing he's only had a couple. I mean, yeah, Nick Lenny was a good trade. Johnny Boychuk was a good trade. Picking up the draft pick that turned into Matt Barzal was a good trade. Barzal, 48 points, third on the Islanders in scoring, behind Josh Bailey, who just came back in tonight's loss against Boston. Bailey's got 51 points. John Tavares is a team-leading scorer with 55. Now the question remains, and I didn't get the chance to really dive into this last week, and I wanted to, so I'm going to go ahead with it now.
Is it because of their poor play in this past month?
Well, yeah. The big question mark now is, do you think, and I'll give my take on this, do you think John Tavares will be back in an Islander jersey next year, and why?
I know you say you're going to say no.
Well, no, I want to hear your take on it first, and then I'll give my reason.
Oh, God.
Yes, I'm putting you on the spot. You have to think a little bit here on the show, Jeff.
God, if only the Islanders were not in this division.
Yeah, I know. It's
every year, it's always the same thing. It's like,
I know. But the division as it looks right now,
it's like the between the last wild card spot and last place, in the Metro Division is like very minuscule, like 4 points or so.
55 points for Columbus. They're in third place in the division. The last place team in the Metropolitan Division as of right now is the Carolina Hurricanes, 48 points. 7-point difference between third place and eighth place in the division.
But what about the second wild card?
Second wild card spot right now as of this moment is being held by the Pittsburgh Penguins, 51 points. Carolina's at 48. They're...
Five. Wait, 53?
No, it's 51 for Pittsburgh, yeah, 48.
So that's three.
Yeah, you're right. 3 points back.
Yeah. So just imagine that.
And the Islanders are a point out after tonight's loss to Boston.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Philly's, technically, they're tied in points, but Philly's ahead of them because they think a goal differential. The Flyers are at zero. They're dead even. 132 goals for, 132 but, against. The Islanders are at minus 12.
What can the Island... The thing is that the Islanders are pretty good this year, and they're just in another year where everyone else in the same division is good.
I also never would have expected to say this, that yes, Washington's in first place, no surprise there, but the second place team in the division is the New Jersey Devils. Never thought I'd say that.
Why is this the division that always is hell?
I know. I can't explain it.
Honestly,
it's fun. It makes it fun, though.
Honestly, because it's such a fun and competitive division, Tavares will stay.
Yeah.
That is why. They're not a bottom feeder when Tavares is here. And I just feel like because of this division where you have to be at your top best and your teams have to be top best, and, you know, the Islanders have been pretty good this season, even though they've been struggling this month, I just think that they're... Unless Tavares wants an easy way out, or if Canada overspends, when I'm saying Canada, of course, I mean one of the Canadian teams really overspends to get Tavares. Tavares will stay.
I don't see
Tavares going anywhere else, unless somehow the Islanders really crap the bed in the second half because he's fed up, and or. If one of the Canadian teams really overspends to get Tavares.
Which is probably not going to happen. Now, the Islanders in January are 3-5, including tonight's loss. 3-game losing streak to start the month, 3-game winning streak, and now a 2-game losing streak after a 5-4 overtime win in Montreal on the 15th, which was Monday night. Then and that's when Thomas Greiss had to make 54 saves in the hockey game.
Yep.
Which was insane. Greiss stood on his head and allowed Tavares to score the overtime winner. I figured they would be out of gas the next night on Tuesday. They were. They lost 4-1 to the Devils. Then they get spanked 5-2 tonight by Boston on a Brad Marchand hat trick. The biggest problem is, and somebody else pointed this out to me the other day, although I kind of started to recognize it. The one year where the Islanders have fantastic goaltending, which was last year, the offense doesn't measure up. This year, the shoe is on the other foot. The offense is amazing.
Isn't that what always happens?
Yeah. The second highest scoring team in the NHL this year, the only team that scored more goals than the Islanders, is the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are the best team in hockey. But yet, the goaltending is not there. I think part of that has to do with the fact that Johnny Boychuk has missed a significant amount of playing time, and Calvin DeHaan's done for the year with an upper body injury. I think part of it has to do with the fact that Casey Cizikas has missed time, which hurts the penalty kill. And I think the fact that Nikolai Kuhlman, who I know a couple of Islander fan friends I've talked to, hate him because he isn't very productive, but he's a damn good penalty killer. He's done for the year with a lower body injury that had to require surgery.
Yeah. Again, that's the whole thing. I don't want to say the same cliche, but unfortunately I have to. Injuries happen all the time.
Yeah.
And it's basically the teams that know how to deal with it and produce with the depth make it.
Yeah.
And right now, the Islanders, just like many other teams, are dealing with it. And right now, the offense seems to be doing all right, but the defense to help the goaltenders is not.
Yeah, and I started to mention this earlier with Matt Barzell. If you want to read more thoughts on him, check out the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. There's an article I posted on Matt Barzell.
Billy is pretty good, too.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from him. They had a big night the other night when Barzell had his second 5-point game of the year in Montreal. So, go figure with that. I mean, Barzell is good. And with Tavares, he's said multiple times he wants to stay on Long Island. And He wants to stay with the Islanders, and I would love it with Tavares coming back. But
I mean, they also have going to have a new home, finally, a home of their own.
Yep. I mean, the two biggest things that I've read that...
So check that one up for a reason for Tavares to stay.
And again, the Islanders have two big players in this lineup that they need to have re-signed. Tavares and Josh Bailey, because Bailey's a free agent.
I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, as anybody who knows...
I had a feeling, though, honestly, like, as... When I said if Josh Bailey stays, he's going to be much better because he's going to have all those years of experience and stuff like that and get stronger and all those types of things. And now he's found his legs in the game where he could be productive.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that he just had a longer growing pain than what you expected, especially when he had basically zero time in the AHL.
Which,
remember, he was drafted and brought up to the main roster immediately.
It's because the Islanders didn't have a way to be able to bring Bailey along gradually, which is what I think they're trying to do with Josh Hosang, which is why he's still in the minors.
Exactly.
And somebody like Tanner Fritz is up here in the NHL. I'm sorry. I think Tanner Fritz is a good hockey player. And the argument I've always made with the NHL is, even if you're the worst player in the entire league, you're still better than 98% of the hockey players on the planet because you're in the NHL. But why Josh Hosang? How great of a line would that be? You and I have seen Hosang play in person.
Yeah, he's been very good.
So why not put him on a line with Barzal and Beauvillier? That might have... The BBH
next
line,
season.
That would work.
Yeah, I mean, maybe next year.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, it's still the best way. I mean, that's how Detroit, before these past few seasons, has been a model franchise because they always bring up these prospects with years of seasoning in the AHL.
Yeah.
And they turn out to be very good. Not now, but back then.
Yeah, and that's, again, back to the argument we made about Josh Bailey. That's exactly what's happening with him. The only reason it took a while is because he was thrown right into the fire and didn't have a chance to get acclimated.
But now he's in his prime and producing.
Yeah, and which is why I think he should get a contract too, and I can't believe I just said that, because anybody who knows me knows I've bashed Josh Bailey in the past.
Yeah, I know.
Bailey, I now willingly admit to it, I was wrong.
You want to talk about the other teams, though?
Well, let's see.
The surprise of the Golden Knights?
Yes, sir. The fact that the Vegas Golden Knights are sitting where they are in the standings is flat out amazing.
Aren't they first in the West?
I know they're
on the top.
Check. Yeah, 3 points up on Nashville for the best record in the Western Conference.
How far are they behind Tampa Bay for best team overall?
Vegas sits at 63 points with a record of 30-11-3 after 44 games. And Tampa Bay, after 45 games, sits at 31-11-3, 2 points up. 65-63 for Tampa.
I bet Vegas has the best home record.
Tampa Bay's home record is 17-5-1.
Oh, God.
Vegas at home. Oh, God. 18-2-2 for Vegas.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Did Vegas... the Islanders go there yet?
No. Ironically enough, that's their last game before the All-Star break. It's next Wednesday.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They better win these next few games before going to Vegas.
Yeah. All right. So as far as it relates to the Islanders, I promise this will connect to Vegas. The rest of the schedule, after tonight's game, they go to Chicago.
I don't care about the Islanders right now. We want to talk about the other teams.
Yeah, they go to Vegas Thursday, January 25th. That's the last stop before the All-Star break. Yep, and it's the one time you got to go to Vegas. It's right before the All-Star break. Oh, hi! You got to go to Vegas.
They got to beat Chicago.
And then they got Arizona in between then.
They better beat those two teams. Because there is absolutely...
No chance you're going to win in Vegas.
A hell's chance of winning in Vegas. What? This is an expansion team, and my God, those players that went to Vegas in the expansion draft really, really have a chip on their shoulder, and so is the coach.
And oh, by the way,
because that, you remember how that coach got fired?
Jared Gallant.
Yeah. Basically, had to get a taxi to get out of this. After a loss in away game, Florida's like, yeah, we're not going to fly you home. So take a taxi and get out of here.
Yeah.
Look at him now. That's a revenge saying, hey, I deserve better. I'm going to be an awesome coach. And look what's happening now. Same thing with the players.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, Vegas is coming off a 4-1 win tonight in Tampa. They just beat the Lightning tonight.
Do they have any superstars at all?
Let's see. The biggest name that people might recognize offensively.
I know James Neal.
Yeah. James Neal's 30 points, which is good for fifth on the team in scoring. Jonathan Marchessault is the team's leading scorer with 42 points. He didn't even make the All-Star team. The only All-Star from this Vegas team is their goaltender, Marc-Andre Fleury.
What?
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Has he been injured, off injured this entire season?
Marc-Andre Fleury, 15 games played this year, 10-3-2, with a 1.72 goals against average and 2 shutouts.
Did he recently come back?
Yeah. He missed 25 games due to a concussion.
Oh, what?
And his replacement?
Is the All-Star game?
Yeah, he's the only representative of the Golden Knights in the All-Star game.
What?
Hey, I think it's him and James Neal. Yeah, I know.
I know Malcolm Subban was doing all right, and then he got injured.
Malcolm Subban's record, FYI, 11-2. Malcolm Subban's 11-2 with 13 starts.
Is he back also, or is he still injured?
I think he's still out hurt.
Oh, God.
Oscar Dansk is the backup. 3 starts, 3-0.
Have all of them been home?
That I don't know. But Oscar Dansk has 1 shutout already.
Of course, because it's Vegas.
Yeah, why the hell not, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Next week, we should do the best and worst of the NHL, honestly.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to. It's All-Star Weekend.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah, it's going to be perfect, though. It really is. So, yeah.
A little brush around in the NHL.
Oh, I know.
And then you have the Knicks just going back to form, 5 games under 500. Fans calling for the coach because somehow he can't seem to build the roster or move things around and seems to not work no matter what.
And FYI, the only 2 Golden Knights are James Neal and Marc-Andre Fleury.
You only said it was Fleury, so you're wrong there.
Yeah, no, it's Fleury and Neal. They're the only 2 All-Stars.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, as far as the Knicks are concerned, Steve does have his thoughts on the Knicks.
Oh, please, let's hear that.
And I quote, "As for the Knicks, they're starting to look more and more like the Knicks, which is losing. But I still believe this team is heading in the right direction. They have moved on from Carmelo and are looking to build around Kristaps Porzingis. At this point, it would be best for the Knicks to get the best possible draft pick and keep getting younger. Also, with Phil Jackson gone, Porzingis' future looks bright, and the emergence of Enes Kanter, the Knicks could start attacking more free agents in the upcoming within the next few years." An upcoming free agency.
I mean, you gotta say that they even though like the ways of starting off strong, then teetering down are kind of the same as last season. Yeah, the Knicks have definitely shown that even when younger, they have, you know, decent talent. And they can grow into something. And, yeah, unfortunately, management wants them to make the playoffs no matter what.
Yeah, but they now sit at 21-25 and are coming off a... Excuse me.
And if you're the Knicks, even though you might say it's good to have playoff experience, I don't think it's good for them to be a first-round exit in 4 games.
No. Not yet.
I honestly don't think so. Unless they really, you know, somehow mold together in like, the rest of the season into a formidable team... against others, I just don't see it.
I know.
So still try to play, still develop, but the way things are, the Knicks are better off really getting a draft pick.
I mean, they've got plenty of talent to work with.
And maybe use it to maybe trade for a player that's really beneficial for Kristaps.
Yeah, they've got the talent to be able to build around with KP. They've got stuff to work with Frank Ntilikina and Enes Kanter. They've got stuff there that can actually...
I actually heard that maybe one of the hosts, I forget what radio show, which station, but yeah. One of them was hoping that maybe in the offseason the Knicks should go right after Damian Lillard.
Why not? Why not take a shot at it?
Like 2 first rounds and 2 second rounds for like the next 2 drafts.
I would take a shot at it. I genuinely would. Damian Lillard's had a good career. He's put up good numbers so far this year. Why not take a shot at it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got it, go for it. Why not?
A proven player, and, you know, you're with a budding team like that, and, you know, he could probably do some good stuff during free agency as well. Sure. Unfortunately, right now, we are getting almost low in time. We have about 6 minutes left here.
Hell, so, Lillard's averaging 25 points a game. Why not take a chance on him?
Yeah. If you want to go to trade draft picks, do it for Lillard. He's doing nothing in Portland.
Well, and here's how you know the Knicks are having a rebound, solid start, kickoff to the year. I know they're 4 games under 500 right now, but Kristaps Porzingis, 15th in the NBA in scoring as far as average points per game are concerned. He's sitting at 23.6 per game.
Good for him.
So, yeah, they've got plenty to build around. If you want a shot to go after Damian Lillard, why the hell not?
Yes, we'll probably talk about that more later on or next week, I should say, like that. Maybe Steve and Dan might have an opinion on that theory as well. We are, again, as I said, running out of time, now getting close to 5 minutes left in the show.
So what do you want
to
do?
That also includes the ending. So we got to go on to predict who will go on to the Super Bowl. All
right.
In Minnesota.
Now, we will have predictions from Danny and Steve on that, I hope.
Dan is not.
Yeah, Dan's not going to say anything. We talked about that last week. He's too superstitious.
Because the Patriots are still in it.
He won't say a word.
So I will predict for Dan.
Okay.
Patriots will lose. Because these are Dan's picks.
Yeah.
No.
Steve hasn't given me his picks yet either for the show, but I'll have them on the blog by this weekend, ssonsports.blogspot.com. As far as I'm concerned, Patriots are going to win it by 14.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Yeah?
Before you do, I got the Vegas odds again from Vegas Insider.
Go right ahead.
As we said, the first game is Jacksonville at New England. New England is favored by 9.
New England's favored by 9. They'll win it by at least 10. New England by
so
at least
New England
10.
Will cover as well?
New England's going to cover. New England by 10. With the experience that New England has, and they showed it last week beating up on Tennessee, yes, Jacksonville's got a great defense. And yes, their safeties think that they're going to win this bitch. No, you're not. You're playing in New England, and the Patriots, I think, have maybe lost twice ever in the playoffs at home. They sure as hell haven't done it in the Brady era. That's not going to start now.
Wait, what do you mean, against the Jets?
Oh, yeah, there was that. So they've lost twice in the Brady era in the playoffs at home. Not going to happen this time. Jacksonville's good, but the Patriots is better. New England wins it by 10.
And I laughed at Matt's wrong, Dan, so don't worry.
Yeah. Don't worry, Danny. We got you covered.
I think that New England will not cover.
Okay, but they still win the game.
They still win. Jacksonville will put up a fight, but I think this comes down to experience, not talent.
Okay.
I think New England will win by a touchdown the most.
All right.
I don't know how it's going to be done or whatnot, but it's going to be experience over skill. Got to go with Brady. It's just too proven.
All right.
And so the next game we have right here is the more marquee of the two, Minnesota at Philadelphia, with Minnesota being favored by 3.5.
I can see Minnesota covering it. Minnesota wins it by a field goal. You're going to get that same sense of drama you had last week with Minnesota.
That's not covering
it. Fine. Minnesota fails to cover. They win it by 3. Minnesota fails to cover. They win it by 3. You're going to get that same sense of drama you had from last week's game. Philly's going to keep it close, but Minnesota still comes out on top. Especially after the way last week's game ended, I've got that sense now with the Vikings that they're going to be playing at home in the big game.
I feel like these dramatic wins that happen in the divisional round always lead to a bummer for the winning team with the dramatic win.
Letdown.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a letdown for Minnesota, and somehow Nick Foles will go to the Super Bowl.
And it's going to be a rematch of 2005.
And it's going to be by 4.
All right. So there you have it.
Because that emotional high is going to be just too much for them to recover.
Or, based on the way I'm looking at it, Minnesota's going to take that emotional edge and ride it all the way to a Super Bowl, where they're going to get run over by New England and the Patriots will win their 6th Super Bowl.
All right, let's see who's right then. Let's go, Matt.
There we go.
And here's the end.
And on that note, we have run out of time for this episode of the show. I'd like to remind everybody, as always, that you can follow us on various forms of social media, facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports, Twitter at @S_S_sports, or use the hashtag SollySteve, either way works. At Facebook and Twitter, you can get all your info on the sports world, get all your info on this very show, and you can ask us questions. I'll be more than happy to answer them each and every week right here on the program. You can follow us on our blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes of the show can be found on iTunes. Every other piece of audio we've ever gotten can be found on SoundCloud. All you gotta do is search Solly and Steve on Sports, hit download, and you can take the show with you wherever you go. And if you have any questions, concerns, comments, or whatever you don't want to leave on social media, fine with us. Email us, SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com. For everybody working hard behind the scenes, Third Mike Dan, Steve, and Jeff, I'm Solly. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Later.